Welcome. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from this fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island-chained nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. It's not only fluoridated, it's also Fukushima irradiated, which according to the Prime Minister is good for the economy, because now everybody can get a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb. And my very special guest is Dr. Mark Circus. Welcome to the program.
Well, thanks for having me, Vincent.
Now, one of these little tags, that you've got on your name is OMD. Is that anything like OMG?
No, that's Oriental Medical Doctor. That means I'm an acupuncturist trained in medicine that's a couple thousand years old.
Yeah. Well, have you noticed that the human body hasn't changed much in a couple of thousand years, yet apparently everybody thinks that the medical system should change so drastically?
I like your humor about Fukushima. Yeah, I guess there's really no alternative. It's such a sick and pathetic joke. I mean, on the human race, what we've done, and how incredibly we can even deny something like this that's polluting now the whole Northern Pacific, I guess, will be, at least the surface waters, will be polluted almost now. But let's give it another 2 years to really pollute the whole Northern Pacific, and then we'll start working on the Southern Pacific.
Yeah, yeah. The currents go around, and as far as I'm concerned, what happened after Chernobyl, which was way less damaging than Fukushima, because it didn't get into the ocean, which connects to every other ocean in the entire freaking world, is a massive increase in breast cancer worldwide and a massive decrease in fertility worldwide. And, of course, radiation causes so many, and I think there must be a list somewhere that is pages and pages long of different symptomologies and different conditions that are indeed caused by radiation, and a lot of people would have no idea. Isn't that interesting? So if we have epidemics of goodness knows what, epidemics of cancer, epidemics of mental illness, epidemics of thyroid malfunction, epidemics of liver failure, so on and so forth, nobody would ever like be able to say, hey, it's radiation, because, hey, they're not being told, because it's blacked out of the media.
Yep, they have total control. It's amazing.
Now, speaking of cancer... You've got a little bit of information about cannabis and cancer to share with us today. Would you please divulge?
Well, using cannabis is a good, just alone, forget about other things you'd use with it, but it's a good stand-in for all chemotherapy and radiation. It's a natural form of chemo. If you use it correctly, I would say it's pretty hard to die on cancer if you're taking enough cannabis. It's as simple as that. The research is totally solid. I mean, from Harvard University to much work done in Israel, other universities around the world. I mean, the information is, like bedrock. It's, the science is so good. Of course, pharmaceutical companies try to get in on it, making synthetic stuff. They try to copy cannabinoids, but it doesn't really work very well. So, you can eat it. You can vaporize it and bring it into the lungs. You can make oil out of it and take it orally. I use this CBD cream. It's legal everywhere because there's no THC in it. CBD is basically medical marijuana without the THC. So it's legal. They can't make it illegal. I use it on my feet to control fungus between my toes. It's really cool stuff. I mean, it's a great medicine.
Mark, natural. Before you continue, what's that scraping sound? Sounds like a beard scraping on a microphone.
Okay, let's try. Okay, how's that now? Stop scraping?
It was just intermittent kind of thing. I'm not sure what it was. Well, but it seems to be gone now.
I think it was catching on my chair here.
Yeah. Okay, oh, there it is again.
Well, that right. Could be a cricket on the other side of the wall. I mean, Vincent, I'm talking to you. This is the first radio show I'm doing from my sanctuary. I've been building it for 7 years. It's in the interior highlands of Brazil. It's about 230 kilometers from Brasilia, which is the federal capital.
And wait a second. Is that Brasilia the capital that they borrowed $1 billion off of the World Bank for in exchange for the World Bank owning the entire Amazon basin?
Sounds like something rich people in the world would try to do, something like that. I don't know.
It sounds to me like something they'd be successful at doing.
All this money has been always been funny money from the beginning. All the money they lent to the first, South America, Central America, it's all just the fantasy money they lent out, and they get the money back, and they've been charging interest ever since. I mean, just, it's a sick world we live in. And anyway, I'm here in my sanctuary. I'm at the end of the world here. They finally put in internet. We got internet. It's better here than in the beautiful city I live in on the northeast coast in Brazil. So it's a dream world I have here. I'm in the heart of a valley. I have this big project going and interfacing with a lot of these natives from the area here, and some of them are descendants of slaves from just less than 100 years ago. And it's very fascinating here. Fascinating.
So back on the cannabis. Cannabis. I've got two cannabis convictions. All right. So nobody can deny that I've got a conviction towards cannabis and advancing the cause of it. You know, we've got I've had plenty of cannabis activists on the show. One in particular who I found was particularly interesting was the head of Green Cross New Zealand named Billy McKee. And he's had one of his legs sheared off by a drunk driver once. And his stump gets really inflamed and painful when he's walking around on it with his artificial leg. And he told me something very interesting. You just get raw bud and you sellotape it onto the stump, and it relieves all the inflammation and heals up all the rashes and everything just really, really quickly.
Yeah, it would do that.
It's got so many uses, just many medically uses alone. Basically, I've called it the world's only cure all. Can you name me a condition that it doesn't help in any way, shape, or form?
Well, yeah, no, that's accurate. I would say anytime somebody needs help, this is a help, even if it's emotional help, mental help. I mean, the thing is, if you use it correctly or whatever, it just helps. So, yes, it's kind of a universal helper to help anything. Will it cure by itself? Or you've been convicted twice. I wrote a book on medical marijuana. And inside the book, I have this, what I call Batman and Robin medicine. And Batman, in this case, is magnesium, and Robin is the marijuana. And the two together, it's like marijuana exponential, cubed. The two together just work like for sleeping. See, one thing the marijuana won't do is resolve magnesium deficiencies, and many people are totally wired up because they're magnesium deficient. So I really like to use, like a heavyweight boxer, I like to use punches in combination. So it's kind of my religion. If I have a religion, a medical religion, it's to always use things in combination and to speak in things.
That scraping's getting even worse, man.
Oh, boy. Let me see.
Yeah. See, it just stopped there as soon as you became aware of it.
Okay, so it's not the cricket, and I'll hold the microphone in my hand. That's what I'll do.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, so right. Let's go.
Sorry about that. Keep going.
No, I'm sorry about it.
So PLP.
I was talking about my religion. In medical religion, is always to look at things in combination, because there's, if you hit it from every side, whatever the problem is, that's the best way to cover it. But medical marijuana for me is always right in the middle of it, because it's really one of the most useful and diverse and unique substances. There's nothing that does what marijuana does, which is help regulate things or give feedback signals on a cellular level, so especially between the nervous cells, to give feedback so things can more easily go into harmony. I mean, that's pretty cool, medically speaking, to have something like that. Everything the pharmaceutical companies have, everything the psychiatrists and psychologists have, is just poison. They poison you, and they think they're going to get you better. That's their kind of philosophy.
Yeah.
I don't know how they get away with it, but...
Well, I think they get away with it because I found something very interesting. Yesterday we were having a discussion on the show about psychopaths, right? And what was revealed during that interview is one very interesting factoid, is that in psychiatry, they don't teach you about psychopathy. And that's because the people who invented psychiatry were psychopaths, and they don't want people to know about them. You know, for the same reason that the medical industry doesn't teach people about nutrition, because it would put them the frack out of business. So the reason why they don't teach them about marijuana.
They don't teach them about psychopaths? Is that really true?
Yeah. You know, it's quite extraordinary. It's the only condition that you should actually really be worried about. You know, somebody's got ADHD. Oh, I'm so afraid they can't sit still in a seat for too long and have creativity. Jesus. Oh, my goodness. As opposed to somebody who's at the head of somebody who has a mental condition where they're at the head of the world and have their finger on the red button that will kill all life on Earth and have no conscience or anything like that. They'll actually do it. That's something to be worried about.
Yeah. Well, I live my life like a train on two tracks. So one track is like every month that we have where we don't have a total financial collapse and world panic and total economic, you know, down to the bottom into anarchy. Every month that that doesn't happen, I find, you know, wow, that's a gift to us. It's a grace. Fukushima is a time bomb blowing, you know, on top of all of us through the years. You look into the future. But the financial stuff is right now. You know, it's like, you know, every month we have... The other side of the track is, yes, I'm always running down, looking to work as hard as I can to the end of time, until the internet doesn't work anymore, and, you know, keep... But, you know, it's like things are really hairy right now. And each month is a gift to us.
I think each day is that kind of gift. What was I watching yesterday? I was watching an episode of Family Guy yesterday. And this dog Brian, he gets really depressed because he thinks that life isn't worth it, and so he goes out and he gets really drunk and he hits on women, gets slapped in the face, that kind of thing, and then he meets Frank Sinatra Jr., who tells him, "Look, man, every day that you have on this world is a gift. Why don't you use it? Why don't you go out there and live it?" And I thought that was actually quite a profound realization, even for a cartoon, is that each and every day you can really accomplish something great, and so long as that day isn't full of psychopaths who are trying to destroy the economy, that's nice.
Yeah. So you wanted to talk about sexuality too.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a big subject.
Especially in the porn industry.
Especially everywhere, actually, since everybody was made from sex. Just about everybody on the planet likes it. Just about everybody has a neurosis or even psychosis with it.
So it's at least they don't have fluorosis.
You guys got fluoride in New Zealand?
Oh, yeah. It's everywhere. About half of our half of our cities have got it.
Really? How did it get over to New Zealand? I mean,
well, they import it from China, the phosphate fertilizer industry.
No, I know that, but how did they get that craziness, you know, over the people and the government there? I know United States and idiotic countries that copy them, you know, but...
Well, look at it this way. There is no patented difference between a government in the United States and a government in New Zealand. They're both predicated on the same thing. Complete domination of the executive branch and complete scumbaggery dominating every other branch. Lies, deceit, and deception. So is it any wonder that fluoride's in here? No. No, there isn't. We'll be right back after the break at the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com.
The conditions which framed and taught us our stance have gone with us.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We're broadcasting live on the fabulous American Freedom Radio. Public awareness is such an important thing these days, so I wanted to make the public, the listeners to American Freedom Radio, know something that's happening on in the background here. There's been, as many will have noticed, that the archives are not being done at American Freedom Radio at the moment. So please just, you know, be patient while they're going through that. The problem is being worked on. And in the meantime, I'm not sure if the other hosts do this, but I do record the live stream of the Vinnie Eastwood Show on my second computer in the lounge every day and publish those archives to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com on a daily basis. So if you're wondering where the archives are, at least for my show, they're on my homepage. And archive pages there. Just wanted to let people know that. So just be patient and please, for the love of fracking goodness sake, don't message AFR and tell them I want my archives, where are they, etc. Okay? It's being worked on, yo. Just chill. When it happens, it happens. All right, back to my very special guest. Mark Circus, OMG. I'm sorry, OMD, Oriental Medicine Doctor. Welcome back.
So you were starting... have you talked to many people about sexuality on your show?
Not so much, actually. I mean, we did talk to with one lady about the circumcision and the trauma it causes, sort of like permanently on those who get circumcised, and the trauma of what's it called, miscarriage, childbirth, how to do all that properly. So we've touched on reproduction, but not the actual practice of the lovemaking itself.
It's interesting that you said you wanted to talk about it, because this is a very special moment in my life. I'm, I could say writing, but mostly editing. I'm combining four, almost five of my books into a new book called Love and Sex Medicine. And most of my own writing and work in sexuality, I haven't published at all. My stuff about how it relates to intimacy and love and marriage and all that. Also, I've kind of shied away. I've been really kind of off in medicine land these last 10 years, but now I'm coming full circle, and I'm going to be putting this book out, and I should finish it in about a month or so. And so this is a topic that's really on my mind, because I start editing at like 4 o'clock in the morning before the sun comes up, and reading this stuff, and of course applying it to myself, and to see what I wrote 15 years ago and what I personally have gone through in these 15 years sexually, and my marriage is another whole thing. And one of the things
I thought that sex and marriage were mutually exclusive.
In my original book, called The Marriage of the Souls, which the subtitle is The Second Coming of Pure Love. This is something I wrote here at the end of the world.
You're talking about sex and the second coming at the same time. That's brilliant.
Right, exactly. And even though this particular volume wasn't that much about sex, I have another book called The Heart of Sex. It gets into more than sex. Still, in this Marriage of the Souls book, I defined love independent of sex and independent of number. Meaning that everybody deserves pure love, everybody deserves God, three women together, three men together, two men, one, it doesn't matter the number, the sex. What matters is the love. What matters is the pureness of intent and the depth of communication, the respect for other people's vulnerabilities, some very basic things, empathy and compassion for others. And this is all independent of what sex you are and how many people get together to have it or not have sex. In my Heart of Sex book, of course, if you want to, the Taoists, they say, if you want to live for 1,000 years, get a hold of your sexual energy and get total control of it. And, don't have an orgasm and just retain all your energy and you'll live for 1,000 years. I don't know if that's an exaggeration or not, but there's something to it. This is a lot of energy in sexuality, and it's for, the religions of the world sabotaged it. So most people are kind of quite a bit damaged with their sexuality. And this is not talking about the 30% of women, at least, who have been sexually abused or raped, and the trauma that causes all of them and then their children, especially their daughters. And, so we are, we're a friggin' mess sexually.
Well, and have you noticed that there's an oversaturation of it? And sex without love is like a car without gas. It just doesn't go anywhere, does it?
I'd say definitely not. I was lucky enough to always, every time I made love, except for maybe once in college when I was drunk one night, I've only had the experience of making love to people I love, so... But I can imagine, I've had enough experience with enough people. It's not love. It sucks. Mm.
So, well, how do you reconcile that?
How do I reconcile what?
Well, the fact that people are tied up with sex and they're forgetting love as the most important element of it.
Well, if that's true, if that's what people are doing, or when any, we talk in general or specifically, you look at any individual, and if they don't have love in their life, and if they have a lot of sex but no love, they tend to be totally screwed up. I mean, it doesn't lead anywhere. It leads to problems, and big problems, like pregnancies and unwanted children, and, on and on and on, so... For sure. I only met one person in my life, or at least in the last 20 years, who literally said to me, "I don't believe in love." And that was, it was shocking. And it ended up in my book, because it was shocking for me to hear that. I've been down here in Brazil 22 years and basically surrounded by with love most of this time.
It's like saying somebody doesn't believe in the sun. It's right there. It's in your face all day long. And you don't believe in it? You know, my uncle once told me, I said, hey, do you want some mayonnaise on your sandwich? He goes, no, I don't believe in mayonnaise.
You know what I do every morning? Vincent, at 7:05, the sun comes up over the hills or the mountains around us. And I eat the sun for about... I just started doing it again because I just came back. I can stare at the sun directly as it comes up for about 5 minutes until it's quite a bit over the horizon, just staring at it, eating it. I love it. I have built a solar temple for this.
Mm. Well, that's sun gazing. There's actually reports of a man in I think eastern India who for the last, I think maybe 30 or 40 years, has not consumed a drop of water or a scrap of food. He eats the sun. And what's interesting is that the photons from the sun, they're capable of being transmitted through the eyes and indeed charging your system. And the entire reason why your blood flows through water or through food is because it's energy, right? That's all that the body really needs it for, is to create energy. So if you consume the energy through your eyes, and it's possible to do this with the sun, you don't need food or water if you do this this technique correctly. And a bunch of scientists were like, oh, that's BS, that's BS. He can't not eat. He can't not drink. He'll die. And so they put him in a lab with no food, no water, obviously. And he was just fine, you know, for weeks, just breathing. He's like, well, what are you worried about? What do you doubt me now?
There's about 5 months ago, a patient of mine, a cancer patient, gave me a biomat. Have you heard of a biomat?
No.
A biomat is a far infrared mattress. Instead of a sauna, instead of buying or going to a far infrared sauna where you get into it, it's a mattress that you can put on your bed or on a massage table or on the floor, and you lay on it, and it radiates the body with light, far infrared light. And the light, when it penetrates a couple inches into the body, it turns to heat. And with this thing, I mean, you can do lots of things with this thing. You can kill cancer cells with it. You can... microwave cancer and heat it. It'll die from heat prostration before the person will. You can use far infrared. You can use these mattresses and sandwich a person in between two of them. But these things, this mattress, you can sleep on it. And what you're doing is just sleeping on something that's really super warm, like a woman's arms. I tell you, it feels that way. Like with your lover and somebody you love, it's warm and feels. You can sleep on this thing and radiate yourself all night long with light, with radiation of a very healing type, very relaxing type, very regenerating, increases the immune system. This thing, I wrote two essays about it after I got one, after this person gave it to me, and wow. It's just exploded. It was just amazing. It's like...
Yeah, me too. I wrote my essay, and he wrote me a letter back, and he said, hey, thanks for writing me, essay.
When I write, people listen. They take me seriously. So so this whole thing about light, I'll be publishing actually on Monday a book. I publish usually like one book every couple of months. Monday or Tuesday, I'm publishing a book called Light and Heat Medicine. And it's an old thing of mine. I was a student of Christopher Hills. You ever hear of him? He was the guy who brought spirulina to the world. He was the one who did this creative conflict process. Like, I'm the last.
Apparently, that was a spirulina of the moment thing.
No, it's a spirulina since for 35 years now. It's a thing that started with him and spread all over the world. And excuse me. Get some water.
I have this this also impression as well from you that you're very reserved, like you don't make big claims or things like that. Like you actually try to get things nailed down before you start really talking about them and releasing the information. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, sure. I kind of stake my reputation on every word I write. You know, it's like I write, and this has been kind of the secret of my work for about how many years? 17 years ago when I first got on the internet, I realized that everything you write and publish on the internet is like, you know, could be preserved or known by everybody or the CIA, or it doesn't matter who. It's information that's almost permanent. So it's like being talking in front of God. It's like, every word counts. So I started writing on the internet like I was speaking to God because everybody's listening.
So and that, God knows whether or not you're full of BS.
Exactly. Say again?
Or is that Santa? Oh, no. Santa just knows when you've been naughty.
No.
That's why he doesn't visit the White House.
No, here's the real trick. In my book, Heart Health, which defines the heart as the vulnerability of being, this is a book I wrote at the same time I wrote Marriage of the Souls. What was I going to say?
I think you're about to say that we're about to go to break.
the heart that everybody has, their being, is the truth of life. It's the part of us that cannot stand lies or untruth. You cannot be in the heart and lie at the same time. It's impossible. So
I think that's absolutely truth. Yeah. Because a lot of people out there who are really heartless are often, if not invariably, lying filth. We'll be right back after the break at the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Don't you go anywhere, ladies. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week. And you can check out the archives at TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com. That's TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com. Vinnie with a Y, because it's the most important question. And Eastwood as in go ahead, make my news. And my very special guest is Dr. Mark Circus, AC, that doesn't stand for air conditioning, is it? OMD, Oriental Medicine Doctor. Hey, AC may not stand for air conditioning, but you are very cool, aren't you? I'm sorry, bro.
Okay. Acupuncturist. Well, at least I was one. I don't practice anymore, but...
So that would be an inaccurate puncturist, then?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
An inactive puncturist.
Yeah, okay. I gave that quite a while ago. Well, I've invented a new form of medicine, so I had to give up the old stuff.
Really? A whole new form of medicine?
That's exactly what I did. Vincent, I was nobody. 10 years ago, I was nobody. Nobody in the world knew me. I didn't own a penny. I didn't own anything. I was living in a beach town in the northeast coast of Brazil. And 10 years later, I've created a new form of medicine called natural allopathic medicine.
Are you holding and your microphone now, or have you put it down?
No.
That scraping's come back.
Okay, we'll try again. I feel like a student in school. So what was I saying? I was...
You were living in a beach town? Yeah, nothing.
I was living in a beach town, had nothing. And then I started this organization called the International Medical Veritas Association. And make a long story short, I've literally changed how medicine is being practiced everywhere in the world, from Moscow, China, Australia, Canada, South. Not, you know, 95% of the mainstream, of course, hasn't heard about me, but growing, I've created a real change in how medicine is looked at and practiced, and I call that natural allopathic medicine. And here I am 10 years later, finishing my sanctuary, which I've been building for 7 years. And I didn't want to tell you how much it's worth. I mean, it's going to end up being 14 bedrooms and I think 12 bathrooms, going to be a retreat guest house, surrounded on three sides by two rivers that just surround the house. You can drink right out of the rivers. I mean, kind of a paradise. And literally,
no chemtrails?
None.
Well, thank goodness for that. You'd be the one.
I have never seen one down here in Brazil. And I think I would have seen them. I've been in three different major areas of Brazil this year. So anyway, it's been an interesting ride these years, and where I'm ending up, you know, after doing what I've done and how I did it. I mean,
a lot of people who do great things, they often wonder how they did it. And you know, my interpretation is you were meant to do it. And so whatever came along, it was meant to help you.
Yeah, and I believe in the extra help that heaven dishes out. And I built in the downstairs in the living room. It's a big, massive living room. One wall is a wall of river stone, and I built this big, like a little mountain inside the house, and then on top, like a waterfall comes down, and on the top is a statue of Mary. It's Mary, for sure it's Mary, but it's not really Catholic Mary. It's the way I look at it, it's like the universal goddess. And I am a servant of the goddess. I'm maybe reaching the supreme masculine type of energy, the god type energy, but I'm particularly serve the goddess, which is my wife, of course. I feel like I've gotten a lot of help and have had some direct contact with this universal goddess type being. And I think that's why I'm still alive. So,
well, interestingly enough, when people were captured, U.S. soldiers were captured in Vietnam and they spent time in Vietnamese prison camps, they found invariably that those who had a strong belief, a strong faith in God, were the ones to survive. And those who were atheists died relatively quickly, because when they're locked away, alone, with no hope of rescue, there's nothing.
But if you're a man of God or a woman of God, you're
never
alone. Right away. You're never alone. You're already rescued.
Yeah, and my sister's an atheist, and she doesn't believe in any of this kind of stuff, and so naturally, she's become rather bitter through life. And you know, I don't practice religion. I practice being spiritual. And I think that religions and spirituality are mutually exclusive to a large degree.
To a large degree. To almost an absolute degree, but it's too much to say that. To a large degree. You know, when it gets to sexuality, the imprint on sexuality comes from the major religions, whether you be Christianity, Judaism, Islamic, Hinduism. You know, that counts for what, about 95% of the human population? I'm not sure. And all four of these religions And of course, the Protestants, and you have to add all that in. You know, the basic teaching corrupts the sexual impulse.
Mm.
It makes something ugly out of something beautiful.
Yeah.
Makes women something, you know, it's just sick. It's really sick. So that's why I say, you know, getting into sexuality is just a huge and very deep hole, you know, to go into. And
so to speak.
So it's, you know, eventually somebody, I don't know if it's going to be a me or not in this book, but they're going to have to redefine things. Except that it's, you know, you deal with writing about sexuality in an honest way, you come right down and confront religions head on.
See, I don't think you're necessarily writing about sexuality. I think what you're writing about is sex reality.
That's good. The sex reality.
That can be the name of your next book.
No, this is
Sexuality and the sex reality.
Vincent, I'm retiring probably. Let's give me until September. At least I'm retiring as a writer.
Just put out a booklet then. You know, it'd be a shame to waste it.
Next week, as I was saying before, and I forgot to finish, I'm publishing Light and Heat Medicine. It's a lot about these far infrared systems that you can sleep on, what you can do with them. But it's also about human photosynthesis and how we process light. It's about, when I was mentioning Christopher Hills, my oldest work as a color psychologist and how we eat light and break it down into the seven colors. You know, this was my life for like 15 years, about 30 years ago. And then 2 weeks later, I'm publishing my book called Water Medicine, and I'm about to redefine the meaning and what it means, what quality water really is and how to make it. It's a lot about the story of magnesium bicarbonate water, which I am going to be coming out with the first water filter system in the world that makes magnesium bicarbonate water. And this came to me like out of heaven about 3 months ago. And then about 3 weeks after that, this incredibly genius, this nuclear physicist calls me from from Florida. And he said, my guides were screaming at me to call you. I've created the first concentrate, magnesium bicarbonate concentrate, and I want to give it to you to investigate and to market and to do everything with it. So that's coming out. And then I'll come out with this love and sex medicine book. And then I guess in September I'll be releasing my surviving cancer compendium, which is going to be like 3,000 pages. And then, Vincent, I'm finished. I've written enough. I'm going to do something else.
There's some major interference coming through here, Mark. Are you holding it real close to the computer or something like that?
No.
Oh, that.
How about
that?
How about now?
A little bit better.
I turn toward the direction where this bug is outside my house cricketing. Maybe it's that.
Yeah.
So, okay, anyway, so I'm finished. I had enough. What else do I have to say? I'm going to be publishing like 3,500 pages in the next 4 months, and then I think I've written up. Yeah,
mate, that's a heck of a lot of writing.
Yeah, yeah. So don't you think it's enough for one lifetime already? I mean,
I don't know. You take a look at somebody like what's his name, famous science fiction writer Philip K. Dick. He would write like 4 novels a year and did so for like 10 years. But of course he was on methamphetamine most of the time, so you know, couldn't sleep, so just stayed up and write most of the time. And then he had a vision of himself dying between his armchair and his coffee table, and then he didn't turn up for a meeting one day, and his friends came over to his house and found him dead between his armchair and his coffee table. Isn't that interesting? All right. Well, we'll be right back after the break. And one thing we wanted to go into is healing sexual trauma, because also this is something that is a big, big thing in the world today, especially for those who were choir boys in the Catholic Church. We'll be right back after the break at the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com. Fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness and Catholic Church pedophilia, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go freaking nuts. And my very special guest. Ooh, man, I'm not feeling too well. I've been up really, really early these last 2 days to do to do other people's radio shows, and I remember one time a guy was accusing me of ignoring him because he was messaging me at like 4:20 in the morning, asking for permission for the details about the show and where it's streaming and stuff like that. I was asleep, bro, you know, and that's the interesting thing when you're on the other side of the world is that people don't understand time zones. Trust me, I've tried. I've had many, many people, particularly Americans, attempt to work out what the New Zealand time zone is. To date, only one person out of hundreds has gotten it correct. Don't bother. Right, my very special guest, Dr. Mark Serkis, OMD, Oriental Medicine Doctor. Welcome back. Now, we wanted to talk about sexual trauma and how to heal that puppy. Could you please give us a background on what is sexual trauma, firstly?
Well, this takes us right down to the root of sex, and what it really is. So to speak. Since we were born and created from sexuality, somehow the sexuality has such a basic and primordial part of creating our existence, that when you hurt somebody's sexuality, when you attack it, abuse it, what you're doing is you're attacking a person on their deepest vulnerability. You're going down to their soul and you're taking a baseball bat and you're knocking the shit out of them.
We can't say that on FCC-regulated radio. I apologize to the affiliates and listeners, but hopefully you're over 18 and you can be adult about it. Sorry, Mark, continue. Mark, are you there? We appear to have lost him. Okay. Isn't that interesting how the guest gets knocked off as soon as he violates FCC regulations? There must be a conspiracy afoot here somewhere. I also wanted to talk about this sexual trauma, because I've met a number of people who have suffered rape, molestation, even as children, and that none of them have fully gotten over it. None of them. Which is why I think it's so important to learn about how to heal sexual trauma, because it's that hard to get off. You know, the reason why nobody wants to talk about this is because it's so intensely personal. Okay, it's horrific. Children being raped? Who wants to talk about that? Nobody. Okay? You know, there's pedophile scum out there who want to do it, but they never talk about it. And the people who it happens to are so damaged, so ashamed, so in pain, that to talk about it brings all these things back to the surface. And the problem with that, I find, is there's little reprieve Okay. I don't know how much counseling it takes. Mark seems to have dropped off completely now, off of Skype. So maybe the Illuminati are messing with us, because this is something that the Illuminati are really, really into. And I use the term Illuminati loosely, of course, because I believe, based upon interviews with a number of individuals around the globe, that there is a global pedophile network that is so powerful that anybody who tries to expose it and becomes successful at exposing it, or has first-hand experience with this and has credibility still intact after all the demonization and things of that nature, is often killed by these people. This is the dealing. This is what we're dealing with at the end of the day. A horrific global system. It's not just isolated, okay? They control a number of elements. And Mark Serkis is back. Adam, can you bring him back up, please? Sorry, ladies and gentlemen, I'm producing on air here. The element that is most disturbing to me is not just the fact that it's going on, but the fact that it's so powerful that it's capable of covering itself up all the time. This is really terrible. And on top of that, the damage that they do to people, children, they are also involved in large quantities of human trafficking. DynCorp, I believe, was taken to court over something like this before. I'm just trying to try and bring up Dr. Serkis now. Here we go. Doesn't seem to be working. Okay, still having technical problems there. Bring him back. Sorry, ladies and gentlemen, for this, because we're talking about a really important issue, and then naturally there's a cutout here, because this is the topic that the New World Order doesn't want discussed. But then again, Mark is in Brazil, so it might just be a connection issue there, and we're not having any response from the board or anything like that, having massive technical issues. So, you know, if it's a coincidence, it's an extremely fracking suspicious one. Okay? Dig this. You know how they get away with it? You know why they're capable of kidnapping and disappearing hundreds of thousands of children, 400,000 children a year in the United States alone disappear? Those of you who've been living in the United States for a while, you might remember once upon a time they used to have children's pictures on milk bottles. And they're not on those milk bottles anymore. You know why? Because there's not enough milk bottles. Seriously. That is how bad the situation is. It's no different in England. United States got 400 million. They get about 400,000 missing kids a year. England has only 40 million, and they have 100,000 kids missing every year. It's rampant. If you Google Holly Greig, G-R-E-I-G, I believe, she was a child with Down syndrome, and she was hired out by local pedophiles to the elite of her particular town there. Okay? She was passed around like a bag of Skittles to all these filth. The lawyers, the doctors, so on and so forth. So when we talk about sexual trauma, and Dr. Mark is back with us, welcome. When we talk about sexual trauma, understand that it is not an isolated thing, that it is global, that it has massive implications for humanity, and indeed is an integral part of the elite. They believe, they actually believe, that by raping small children, that they harvest their essence and can live longer and with more vitality. It's a real satanic business. And so that's why I'm so glad, because this is actually my pet issue. I don't talk about it very often because those who talk about it all the time start to get some of the trauma onto them, all right? Because you can't feel empathy for those who are suffering sexual trauma at the hands of a scumbaggery elite without starting to get trauma, all right? It's actually traumatic to even discuss this issue in a lot of cases, which I incidentally think is probably one of the reasons why a lot of people don't talk about it at all. All right, so, Dr. Mark, welcome back. So could you please, I was just explaining about the international pedophile rings and human trafficking and sexual trauma and how bad it really is for people and how it's really difficult for them to heal or even discuss or talk about it. But you were you were cut off just at that point, which I thought was a little bit suspicious. But anyway, here you are. You're back. Could you please continue your experience? Your explanation of what sexual trauma actually is. The last thing you said was bashing the Shiite Muslim out of somebody's soul with a baseball bat by penetrating them.
Right, exactly. It's, rape. Is a rape of the soul, because our sexuality is connected to our soul. It goes that deep. It's not just a physical thing. We created in it. God created this sexuality, this energy, and life gets, these miracles comes from it. So to attack it is to attack God, is to attack everything that's beautiful and holy. And so when that does happen, and it happens, in families, 30%, when you look at 30% of women are, and that's probably a conservative figure, but that's kind of official, 30% have been abused or raped. And a lot of that, a big percentage, that is in the home. Most women who've been raped are raped by somebody they know. The statistics, it's not strangers who do most of the raping. It's people when the most violent place is the family. And for women and children, the chances of being attacked increases in the home, especially in America. It's pathetic. The whole thing is, everything that's happened around sexuality and what it's done to family life and human relationships. I mean, we need to do another show where we get into, satanic, black, dark. I mean there are kinds of people on this planet where a psychopath doesn't quite cover it. I mean, there's even, or you really look at the definition of psychopath.
I think you'll be surprised what a psychopath will cover.
No, I've written about it, so I do. I know. It's beastly. It's the opposite of exactly my work, this marriage of the soul, heart health. Now, I am who I am because through two decades of effort, I literally, my heart conquered my mind. When I was a young guy, I was an arrogant, idiot and conceptual and thinking and, so complicated. And about 35 years ago, I went to this place called, 30 years ago, University of the Trees in California. And somebody looked at me and said to me, I was there a couple of weeks, it was a community. They looked at me and they said, "Oh, you have a big heart." And I literally turned around, looked behind me, and tried to see what they were talking about. I really didn't understand myself, my own heart. Anyway, from that point, through two decades of suffering and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, I literally conquered my mind by opening up my heart to this incredible, open state. I'm like one of the most open people on the planet, and I show it. I mean, you can go to my site and read about what I have to say about just about anything, from sex to love and marriage to medicine to oncologists to, psychopaths. I mean, I cover it all, and I speak kind of with a brutal honesty. That's where... I don't know where I'm going at this point.
Well, okay. Well, let's go on because I think we've covered what sexual trauma is, okay. And I've covered psychopaths yesterday on the show, and I just covered very briefly about the global pedophile network. There's only one thing I want from you, only one thing, and please give it to me as succinctly as you can. How can you heal sexual trauma, because I know a lot of people who are sexually traumatized, and I've always tried to help them, but I can't. I don't know how.
Well, let me tell you what I created, which got me into this in the beginning. About, I was living in Gainesville, Florida, about 23 or 4 years ago, and all of a sudden, a series of women came to me, one after another, one at a time, all with, you know, exactly this problem. They were either raped or sexually abused as children, whether it be by an uncle or father, strange, whatever. And what I did was I would put these women into a trance. And then what I would do is, while I was putting them into a trance, I would close my eyes and listen to myself, and I put myself into a trance. So the two of us were in a kind of this trance. And then I would direct the woman to their heart and to go back or go to the place inside themselves where they needed to go. And instantly, every time it worked exactly the same, the woman would go right back to the trauma. And then we would process that together. We would, I wouldn't be controlling like a therapist or a hypnotherapist. I would be in a trance. So if the woman was sitting on the stoop in front of their door after they'd been raped or something and crying, I was sitting there next to them in like astral form. Our imaginations were connected in the trance and our hearts. And there were some women that I did this for like 2 hours a day, every day, 7 days a week for like, you know, a week or 10 days. You know, there was one woman who was like a marathon. And to get to the end of a story and really get healing, it really takes a lot of courage, and it's very difficult because it's, the hurt is so deep. I mean, when I tell you this really reaches down to the soul, when you work with somebody, or you know, when you see the person suffering, the suffering that causes them, they live with their suffering. Here we are on this planet, and the person's been, you know, hurt sexually, and they suffer. It's not a joke. It's not a light thing, and it can't be covered up by pornography, and, you know. So it's... So anyway, I had these experiences back then, and it, of course, changed me, you know, to go so deep with women. And in those days, actually, I conquered my feminine side before I conquered my masculine side. I was more of a woman back in those years than the women. I would cry more easily. I would communicate better. I'd listen better. I was, you know, I'd stay home and do the cooking. I did the whole trip. And getting that intimate with women and their hurt and abuse is just, oh, that's great.
It's like some, I've seen that the trauma actually spills over, and you can't. Ooh. It's like the old adage that you can't go to hell without bringing some of it back with you. And speaking of which, ladies and gentlemen, you're about to experience the hell of American Freedom Radio ad breaks, and hopefully we'll bring back some of it with us back in a minute at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We're talking about a very intense subject here, and one thing that I've noticed about sexual trauma as well is that as a man, when you talk to a woman about it, this wall comes up because it was a man that did it to her. And it's. Have you ever heard a woman say, "You don't understand because you're a man"?
Oh, sure. Sure.
That's frustrating.
I've been married 5 times, man.
Then you know exactly what I'm talking about. Okay. Mm-hmm. Or maybe exactly. You don't, because you're a man. Okay. Bringing back on the serious note, you said that you were capable of helping these women, but it took a marathon, intensive effort, incredible empathy, day after day, and in some cases taking a couple of weeks for hours at a time, trying to relive all of this until it gets out. Now, in illness, like a friend of mine, he once had a problem with his eye, and he couldn't see out of it. And his partner was like the country's top herbalist, so he started giving him these herbal remedies and juice fasting and so on and so forth. And what happened is this gunk started coming out of his eye. This pus started squeezing out of the corner of his eyeball, and it just kept coming out and coming out. And he was surprised just as and how much of it there was, until eventually it was all gone. And he could see again. And I feel that the sexual trauma, the psychological business, is not entirely dissimilar to that. You have to get that pus out of your system, and you'll be surprised how much there is and how long it takes. Is that a fair assessment of the situation?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's part of my book. You know, I said it was the Love and Sex Medicine book is four books. Actually, five. My work, my writings about sexual cancer, breast cancer, prostate cancer, ovarian cancer, uterus cancer. All these cancers have, you know, that are around the sexual organs, have sexual stress as part of their etiology. I mean, almost all cancers have, you know, the sexual angle is important. But when it comes to certain cancers, it becomes more critical of a person's sexuality and what's happening. So this is, you know, it's not only emotional suffering that comes from our dysfunctional sexualities and our sexual hurt, but it's actual cancer too. So this is, you know, doubly serious business. This is really serious. And yes, it takes an incredible effort, but at least it did for me to help these women, you know, back then, you know, when I was a much younger man. And it did have a great change on me. Today, well, that's what I'm basically writing the book. I'm finally putting this all out. And how it also relates to our most intimate relationships, which we tend to mess up big time. You know, not the most successful. Modern man is not the most successful at loving relationships that last. You know, it's like this is. So it's. There's so much I would say. Want to say? You know, if we were talking to a woman who's hurt or a man. The hard thing about, you know, talking about it right now is there's so much we would need to say. Or there's so many things I would say to substitute for part of that process. Because, I mean, first of all, it's hard. Very few people have the money to spend, to pay somebody so much to do that kind of work. And then professionals aren't any good at doing this kind of work because professionals, psychologists, for instance, they're trained to do the exact opposite of what you need to do. They're trained to be cool. They're trained to not really share much about themselves and their own vulnerabilities. They're trained to separate and keep a professional distance from their clients. In fact, professional psychologists, they're terrified of meeting a patient anywhere outside of their office. I mean, this is just like taught in the schools and stuff. So they're not, you know, taught to form a union with their patient. And to heal on a sexual level, you really got to get close. And I'm not, really, I mean, you have to, and that's what happened when I would do that trance therapy. When you're both two people in trance, there's no ego, there's no separation. And the woman feels that. They feel it's, you know, like when I can again remember sitting on the front step of a person's house, a little girl, and being there with them. It was just like, you know, they could feel it. They could feel my presence because I would communicate while they were in trance with their eyes closed. We would speak. I would encourage. I would ask them questions, and they would share with what they were seeing, what was happening.
There's that scraping again.
Oh,
You gonna hold your microphone again? Sorry.
I have it around my neck.
Really?
Yeah, this time I don't know what happened.
Okay. Well, anyway, sorry. Keep going.
Well, it's a magic you do. Every time you open, you say so, confront me about it, and it goes away. So that's just cancer.
Yeah, must be a psychological thing.
Yeah, so...
It's all in your minds, ladies and gentlemen. There's no real scratching, okay? There is no band, and yet we hear a band.
You know, when you talk about empathy, you know, what's the ultimate in empathy? When you're so one with the other person, and if that person's hurting, you got to be very strong. You got to be very strong. To go in there, it's like, you know, to go into somebody else's hurt. Because none of us is not, I mean, you have to get pretty enlightened to be beyond your hurt. It takes a lot for anybody to get beyond their own individual hurt. And then to help somebody else. You know, it's a big time job. But the people, you know, some people are heroes, you know, like those guys, 19 guys who died, you know, fighting fires. Sometimes we have to fight a fire in the soul of another person, you know, and there are people who are willing to do that. But the professionals aren't that one. They're trained to do the opposite. So.
Well, you know, so sometimes, Mark, some people have accused me of being unprofessional. And my response to that is, the world is currently run by professionals. Right. How's that working out for you?
It's true. It's true. That's exactly what we have. They're like guilds. Mm-hmm. These professional guilds. They're terrorist guilds.
Feel guilty.
It's amazing that their basic concepts are so twisted. And in their textbooks, in the universities, it's just amazing. It really is an amazing planet. Now, modern civilization is, well, I don't think it's destined to last too long. Not with all these nuclear power plants around the world. Now, with just one of them, already a long-term trend. Fukushima is, you know, for sure toast with the Northern Hemisphere. I mean, and, you know, there's 400 or 500 more of these things around. And things are breaking down. You know, you can look at the news. Things are happening. The weather's getting more extreme, damaging things, destroying things. Volcanoes are blowing, earthquakes shake. Everything's changing and having, you know, stronger impact. So we have a lot of vulnerability, just like a woman's or a man's sexuality. You know, the planet, what we've done, is, you know, having these time bombs everywhere. And people, you're crazy. The people who are leading the show, these are neurotic, sick people with the button nearby. Yeah, it's lucky we still have a planet with these people running this. Really lucky.
Well, I think it's just, you know, it's hard to find the words because we're dealing with something that is so traumatic, it is far more than words, is it not?
Far, yeah.
Words do not compare.
I do a good job when I'm writing, you know, I can present a chapter to somebody. You know, I've written deep things about suffering. The Russians are wonderful philosophers, the old ones at least, of understanding suffering. I suffered for decades with my own ego shit.
There's that FCC violating language again. Sorry about that, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, sir. I'm trying.
Gotta watch yourself.
Vincent, you're very tough.
Well, you can say anything on the show except FCC-regulated words. It's really sad, you know. There's 7 words that you can't say on TV or radio or whatever. And, you know, this is supposed to be America, a nation of free speech, right? And you've got people that regulate what people can and can't frickin' say, and they still say that, oh, we're the greatest country in the world because we've got free speech. Well, I just wanted to say a big message to the FCC, and it's 2 letters. F you. Mm-hmm.
Yes, you know, but Vincent, you're really giving me a feeling, you know, I don't talk, you know, I don't talk to people about these things very much. Not these years. And even when I'm writing, I'm pretty much alone. So, of course, I'm dealing with all these issues in my relationship, my marriage, my family, the whole trip. But when I hear talking to you and hear you talk, you know, it is beyond words. If you were to sum up the suffering that's happening on this planet with seven billion souls, and all the suffering from the sexual stuff, which is so key, it's incalculable. It's an ocean. It's an ocean of suffering. It's very personal to everybody.
Even with empathy, even with a big heart, there are those who are so traumatized that to hear about it, it's like we're doing it to them all over again, and they hate people like us for even bringing it up because it brings all of the stuff back to the surface. That makes it even worse for them.
You think so?
Yeah. Like, I was talking in a car one time, and a friend of Sarah's had been raped once upon a time, and I was talking about a guy that I interviewed that day where his 1-month-old daughter was raped by Child Protective Services overnight. And she got incredibly angry with me and started yelling at me and things like that, as if to very mention the subject, brought it up for her again.
Well, it's just a measure of their pain. It's so painful.
Yeah.
It's so painful. It's so painful. I never met a person who did not have some, you know, I didn't. Everybody had some trauma in this area. Not too many. I do know maybe one or two, maybe sexually enlightened people, but it seems to be a rare thing. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, gold is a rare element. Gold is a rare element, but that doesn't mean it's not valuable.
I met this 80, another patient of mine, 80-year-old woman. She turned me on to the OM movement. Have you heard of them, the OM people?
No.
From San Francisco. OM stands for Orgastic Meditation. And there's a woman guru now in San Francisco, New York. I saw this video maybe 6 months ago. from this movement. And it shows this couple coming in to talk to this woman, who's this sexual guru. And then she brings this couple into a room. They sit down. And then comes another couple. And the woman has no clothes on from her waist down. And she lays down on these special pillows. And the man comes in, sits down next to her, puts her in exactly a certain position, and proceeds, and this is on video on YouTube, and proceeds to stroke her clitoris for 13 minutes exactly in a certain way. And I couldn't even watch the whole video without getting up and going to see my staff in my house in Jean Passot where I live. And I never saw something sexual showed with such lack of shame, so it was pretty amazing. And in August, I guess, this group is going to have an event, their first conference, and they have a room with 1,000 of these, they call them nests, and they're going to put 2,000 people in this room, and they're going to do this exercise together. And it's like a new religion type of thing. I'm not sure, I've written about it. You know, I think there's some very brave people, but maybe some foolish people too. I'm not sure, but some pretty big thing. And even to write about. But this 80-year-old, the point is, this 80-year-old woman turned me onto this group and told me they're doing reasonably good work. She liked it. So I investigated them.
Yeah. Well, we'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, after this coming break here. And I'm actually going to play a clip from a TV show called Scrubs. It's actually, it's a comedy show, but this clip is actually, it's not about comedy. It's about trauma and what doctors go through when they're suffering everybody else's. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on American Freedom Radio. It's our final segment here, and I'm just going to play this quick 40-second clip. This is Dr. Cox from Scrubs talking here, and I don't watch this show very often. In fact, I haven't actually seen an episode in years. I was never really a big follower of it. But for some reason, you know how synchronicity happens. You're there right at the moment when you should have been listening, where you should have seen this particular speech in this particular episode through channel flipping. So I just want to play this for you now. Hope it works.
You see Dr. Wen in there? He's explaining to that family that something went wrong and that the patient died. He's going to tell them what happened, he's going to say he's sorry, and then he's going back to work. You think anybody else in that room's going back to work today? That is why we distance ourselves. That's why we make jokes. We don't do it because it's fun. We do it so we can get by. And sometimes because it's fun. But mostly it's the getting by thing.
All right, now this illustrates, I think, precisely what we were discussing earlier, Mark, about how professionals distance themselves from their patients, and this is the very reason why you can't experience this trauma without and try and be empathetic and try and feel it without it leaving an imprint on you, and to do it day in, day out, as doctors and psychiatrists do. They develop this professional mechanism of not letting it get to them. There's a consequence to that, is that they don't get through to their patients in a lot of cases. What would you say about that?
Oh, not sure. Not sure.
Because I would figure if psychiatrists or in fact, psychiatry itself, where's the article? Here it is, here it is. Out of the New Zealand Journal of Natural Medicine, ladies and gentlemen, psychiatry now officially insane. Okay? Reputable medical journal coming out of New Zealand. Psychiatry now officially insane. And the problem is that if you're trying to get counseling and trying to become at one and at peace with your trauma, having an insane person doesn't quite cut the mustard for it, does it? And all they want to do is dope you up on drugs anyway. You know, oh, you've got trauma. Well, instead of spending a couple of weeks intensively going through all this stuff, really feeling it, crying and imparting this wisdom, sharing part of yourself with people, that kind of thing, instead of doing that, they just dope you up.
When you talk about, you're talking about a special type of darkness that comes from psychiatry. It's a very ugly darkness. It's like rape, you know, on the sexuality. It's a rape on another level. These guys are, well, I don't really want to talk about it because we need such sick words, you know, and a big vocabulary of sick words to do justice to the subject, because we're just touching on it. It's really, it's hard to even think about it. It's easier to write about it.
Yeah. Well, we only
again,
have...
Again, we're at this place where words just don't really cover it, what they're doing.
Try and describe it, because I'll tell you what, this is one of my innate talents. Somebody can tell me a subject matter, somebody can tell me a story, and I can find the words that convey precisely what's going on. This is one of my gifts, and I'm very grateful.
I just don't know if I can control my mouth. See, when I start speaking about certain things, you know, I get a little excited, and I could even get angry because it's really, really, and I don't know if I really can control my vocabulary like you can. You know, the same thing I deal with medicine. You know, you take, you know, a loved one and you take them to an oncologist. You know, it's kind of the same thing. You know, a person's life is on the line. And who is this person who's sitting on the other side of the desk? Well, you know, the psychiatrist, you know, he's supposed to be there for you, for your mental and emotional and even spiritual, whatever, well-being, because that applies to mental, emotional. And what they do, it's a little bit like a little girl comes home and gets into bed, and then her father gets into bed, you know, later on at night and rapes her. It's a little bit like that. I guess it gets into the everything about civilized man and our society. Is you have a situation where people trust others, and those others are raping that trust right back. Whether it be a little girl, her sexuality, a little boy, her sexuality, or a young woman, or an older woman. I mean, they rape 80-year-old women, you know, so it doesn't stop with age. You know, when you go to a psychiatrist, what are you going to a psychiatrist for? Well, obviously some help. You're not going in there to brush your teeth or to get your hair cut. And what do they do to you? They kick you in the ass chemically. I mean, but not just a little bit. I mean, it's like, in terms of what their drugs do, it's like you might as well go back to the Middle Earth and one of these things that they knock down the gates with, you know, the battering rams. You know, these chemical drugs just come in and destroy the person, and many of them are responsible for some of these mass killings. And that information is out there. So, you know, who's doing the killing? Is it these psychiatrists with their drugs? These incredibly nasty drugs. I mean, marijuana, you know, in a million years, these souls are burned forever. These guys could never make back, you know, with the pain they're causing other people. Does that begin to cover it?
I think it does. And what I find is it seems like a hopeless situation, because when you're in it and you don't have the information, if you don't understand the situation, if you're trying to reconcile, why did this happen to me? Why did they do that? Why? And you never get an answer. You keep running yourself around in circles, and your brain starts to eat itself. It starts to eat away at your own heart, and you start to become destroyed as a person. And then the people that are supposed to help you are only there to hurt you even further. And then you start to wonder, you know, why did I even go for help in the first place? And then they stop asking for help. They stop seeking it. And they start to get this impression that nobody cares about me. Nobody will ever help me. And so they stop talking about it. They stop getting it out there. And when they tell their family and their friends about it, they don't want to hear about it because it's too painful for them to deal with. And they say, you should go see a professional about this, a professional that doesn't care, who will give you something that will make you a psychotic killer in the middle of the night and make you act out your nightmares, like the woman who was terribly afraid of drowning, who in the middle of the night, while she was sleepwalking, drowned all five of her children in the bathtub. You know? This kind of stuff.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. Exactly. Mm-hmm. It's literally, I say this literally, hell on earth. It's hell. That is hell. These people are living in hell, and hell probably does not get much worse than that.
Yeah, well, that see, hell would be better. Because at least you know you're not the only one suffering.
Oh, right,
and there's other people there with you, and you can hear their cries, and you know that you're not alone. This is a special kind of hell. This is a special prison inside your own mind, right, where all the trauma and all the pain reverberates forever, without end, with a hopeless situation that you call life. And this is why there is so much suicide prevalent amongst victims of sexual abuse. This is why people not only lose hope, but they begin to blame all humanity for this thing that happened to them. This is why so many serial killers are people that had sexual trauma in their life. This is a big subject, with many ins and outs. None of these ins and outs are things that you want to hear, but you must. I believe that there are no great lessons without great pain and great trauma. And if you ever wanted to learn a lesson of value, you need to feel that pain. You need to feel that trauma. That's why I feel so strongly about this particular subject, because when people tell me about these experiences that have happened to them, I try actively to feel as intensely as I can how they felt. And as such, I begin to understand it. And as I understand it, and as I relay to them some of my personal experience that I can relate to what they're telling me, they feel better about it. Because unlike the last 100 people they talk to, finally, somebody's actually listening. Somebody actually cares. Somebody actually feels something for me. That is the power each and every single one of us has to help people with sexual trauma. If you choose to shut off, if you choose to close up, then I think that you're just as culpable in a lot of ways as the people who traumatized them in the first place. Dr. Mark Serkis, thank you very much for your time. What is your website? Very quickly, we've only got about 10 seconds.
DrSerkis.com. That's DrSerkis.com.
Thank you for your time, your efforts, and your wisdom. And we'll see you again sometime. Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you take this message to heart. We'll see you again.